This is the Reading Instruction Show. I'm your host, Dr. Andy Johnson. Topic of today's podcast is proof of the three cueing systems and making sense of it all. So let's see if we can learn a little something today. First of all, making sense. The brain is a sense-making organ, not a sounding-out word organ. It seeks to make sense of what it encounters, and that includes the squiggly shapes on a page of text. During this sense-making process, it uses multiple sources of information. And if you're reading this text, you're doing it right now. You're using your background knowledge to make sense of the information on the page. Now, if you have a lot of background knowledge related to the things written here, it's easier to make sense of this information. If you have just a little background knowledge, it's a bit more difficult. It probably makes little sense to you. Now, if you have certain kinds of knowledge, you're going to easily assimilate this new information into the file folders in your head, the schemata. You'll think I'm brilliant. You'll pay me money to come and say things to large groups of people so that they too might have this knowledge. And when I talk, people will write down things that I say. And this, my friends, will go a long way towards addressing my self-esteem issues. However, if you have other kinds of knowledge, the information may not fit into any of your file folders. You will think me to be a ridiculous little clown. You'll use your background knowledge to point out just how wrong I am. You'll pull quotes from this text and put them on PowerPoint slides and present results from studies to show the extent of my wrongness. But what you don't realize is this too will address my self-esteem issues, because at least you'll be talking to about me. So from my perspective, it's a win-win situation. However, regardless of your motivation, you will be creating meaning with the print on the page. My job is to explain things so the knowledge in my head may be easily assimilated. I'd like you to have much more of the knowledge that's in my head. My thinking is that if everyone had this knowledge, then they'd truly understand, and then all children would develop their full literacy potential, and the world would be a better place. Of course, I realize that those who think I'm a ridiculous little clown are thinking the same thing about their knowledge. And they're writing books too, except their books have ropes and three-legged stools in them. So what it's not. This is what the three cueing systems is not. It's not a strategy to teach students. It's not a pedagogical strategy that students use. It doesn't exclude phonics instruction. It doesn't encourage children to use picture clues to figure out words. It's not an approach to teaching reading. It's not a method of decoding printed texts. It's not a staple of early reading instruction. It's not whole language. And it doesn't exclude explicit and systematic instruction of any kind. So what is it? Well, here's the thing. Along with all the background knowledge, your brain uses three cueing systems to recognize the words on the page. These are the phonological system, the semantic system, and the syntactic system. Now, one of my graduate students put it succinctly when she said, "When we recognize the three cueing systems, we're developing and supporting what the brain naturally does." Now, these are interacting systems, meaning that they don't work in isolation. Rather, they interact and are interdependent. One system enhances the other. And as you encounter text, your brain processes semantic data, syntactic data, and phonological data simultaneously while utilizing the top-down flow of information to quickly recognize words. This is something your brain does naturally. It's not something you teach. It's not an approach to reading instruction. Now let's take a look at the three systems. And again, they are the semantic system, syntactic system, and graphophonological or phonological systems. And I'm going to demonstrate their existence. First, the semantic systems. Semantic is meaning. We use the context of the sentence and background knowledge to cue our brain as to what a word might be. To demonstrate, here's two words that most likely make little sense to you. Splammer and yobo yobo. Now let's put them in context. Quote, I would like some more coffee. Would you splammer some coffee in my cup? Unquote. The semantic information or context in the sentence tells you that splammer means to pour. Now here's another one. Quote, your hands are dirty. There's dirt all over them. Please go to the bathroom and yobo-yobo them before you eat, unquote. The semantic information in this sentence tells you that yobo-yobo means to wash or to clean. So there are four things to take from this. Number one, meaning does not reside in words alone. Number two, in the real world, we never encounter a single word outside of a context. It's always in the context of a sign, a sentence, or a product. Number three, reading lists of words out of context is not a valid measure of anything other than an ununderstanding of reading. And number four, examining words in isolation should be a small part of reading instruction. So let's go to syntax. Syntax, or the syntactical system, has to do with grammar and word order. Now the passage I'm going to read was taken, the passage I'm going to read was taken from Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass at What Alice Found There. Quote, 'Twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabby. All mimsy were the burrow groves, and the mome wraths out grabby. Now most would read this as gibberish and nonsense. However, using just syntax, there are nine things we know from this passage. One, it's about a creature or creatures, slithy toves. Two, they did something, gyre and gimble. Three, they did it in a place, wabby. Four, there was a second thing, borogrovbies. Five, there was more than one of the second thing. Six, the second thing was something, mimsy. Seven, there was a third thing, momy. And there was only one of the third thing. And nine, the third thing did something, rouse. 10 of the 23 words in this text are nonsense. Yet the syntactic information enabled us to harvest 9 bits of meaning, of information, from this seemingly meaningless passage. Now let's take a look at phonics. The phonological system refers to letter-sound relationships used to decode words during reading. Now the existence of the other two systems does not make this system irrelevant. Below are a series of letters presented letter by letter as you encounter them in a text if you are decoding this word letter by letter going from left to right. Now, as I parse this, I'm going to slow down time and get inside the head of an imaginary reader as they're encountering this word. First, they see the S, as in snake. This could be a bunch of words. S-T, st, as in stuck. Okay, this narrows it down just a bit. It could be a whole bunch of ST words. Stun, stick, staple, stipulate, stop, stats, stay. STA. Who? Sta, sta. This is either a short A sound as in status, or a long A sound such as in stay. We've got the beginning ST blend plus either a long A or a short A. But it also could be an ah sound, like as in staunch, ah, ah. S-T-A-M, stam, as in stammer. It could be stammer, stamina, stamp, stamen, stamen, staminis, stamper, stamens, stamp. S-T-A-M-P, stamp. Of course, the word is stamp. Yes, I know what a stamp is. You either put it on an envelope or you do it with your feet. Stamp, S-T-A-M-P. S-T-A-M-P-E. Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense at all. What's a stamp-a? And is it pronounced stamp-b, stamp-a, stamp-i, stamp-i? Is this a French word? I've never heard of a stamp-a before. S-T-A-M-P-E-D, stamped. Of course, the word is stamped. Like he stamped his feet, or it was a stamped envelope. It has to do either with feet or envelopes, and it's in the past tense. We've almost got the problem solved here. Now, if only I had the words before or after, I could determine if we're talking about an action or a type of noun. S-T-A-M-P-E-D-E. Ah, stampede! Of course, it's that thing that buffaloes do. I know what a stampede is. But wait a minute, what if there's a suffix of some sort attached to the end? It could be stampedes, stampeded, stampeder, or stampeders. All of these are related to the buffalo thing, but have slightly different meanings. Stampede and then a space. Wonderful! There's a space after the last letter. This helps. It means the word is related to a single incident or thing. But it could be related to an event that occurred, sometimes occurs, may occur, or is occurring. Buffaloes sometimes stampede. The buffalo may stampede. It is a stampede of buffalo. It was a stampede. At this point, we know that it's the thing that buffaloes do. But not so fast. Yesterday, I read on the internet that other animals also stampede. It could be about cattle, horses, elephants, sheep, pigs, goats, zebras, or even rhinoceroses. The buffalo started to stampede. The complete sentence. That sure would have been helpful. Had I encountered the word in the context of the sentence, it would have saved me a whole bunch of time. I've watched a bunch of old cowboy movies where buffalo stampeded. Buffalo would have acted as a primer to bring to consciousness buffalo things like stampedes. All right, now let's look at each of the systems together. Each of the three interacting systems has been isolated. I've just done that, and let's put them together. I'm going to read the start of a paragraph that has 110 words, and I'm going to read it through as quickly as I can. And I'm not going to do the whole paragraph. Billy was traveling from Minnesota to California. As he was driving through South Dakota, he stopped at a rest stop to stretch his legs and buy a can of pop. When he got out of his car, and I'm going to pause there, all right? Okay, the paragraph that I just read has 110 words. Now, I read it, I'm going to give you the same words. And I'm going to read it through as quickly as I can. And since I've already encountered these words, I should be able to read it faster the first time. Here goes. Away drove Ann Carr, his in jumped could he as fast as ran Billy. Billy towards Stampede towards started Buffalo. Okay, what? You get the idea. You didn't read the second paragraph as fast as the first. If you could tell, the way I read sounded very much like a struggling reader. I read it word by word in a very stilted and choppy manner, and there was very little, quote, expression, unquote, here. And why is that? If the three queuing systems is a hoax, as Emily Hanford insists that it is, you'd be able to read the second paragraph as smoothly and quickly as the first. But in the second paragraph, I removed the ability to use syntax and semantics. You had only a single queuing system here, the phonological queuing system. Now, do you see what you're doing to children when you focus solely on the phonological queuing system? Do you see what you're doing when you insist that they break the code before they read real books? This has been the Reading Instruction Show. I'm the host, Dr. Andy Johnson, and I certainly hope you learned something today.